nice room. It turned out to be a nice room.
Oh, okay.
I don't have to turn it on, do I? Okay. Who's coming from Public Works, do you know? Okay. Okay. Well, we'll see.
I'm good, how are you?
Hello, Brooks Dame. He'll sit right here. I'll let him sit in the chair seat. It's his district, and I told Jim Pickett called me this morning because he knew I was involved in it. I'm trying to help Randy, and I told him he may be here. I told him to talk to Jimmy. Jimmy can get the news media. That might help him. Oh, we got Steve here. That's great. Yes, sir. Where are you really?
Oh, he is. Oh,
wow.
All right.
Even I started in 74.
Wow.
I
started in 81. How many years have you worked for?
36.
I'm on my 43 years. This January 1st year.
Yeah.
Y'all got hit so hard down there.
Well, my agency made up over $200 million.
Wow. Yeah, we're a pretty big agency. So when you retired, were you on the old contract?
I was on the blend.
That's what I'm on. Trying to be a team player and all that kind of stuff. Well, good. That's the one I went on. I wanted to be a game player, but I made my fair share of management trips and all that. But now, my manager, or whatever it's called, said, well, come do a fall planning with you. And I said, well, just take the last one and put it in the copy machine.
Edie is
such a good person. She's so good. She's so good. My wife and I love her to death. I know, but now she went out to the big car. Well, you know what? There's no market because, so like, for homeowners, I can't ride any homeowners on home unless it's less than 20 years old. And I'm in a historic district like she was. So I have no market. But I don't lose many homes. I lost 50 homes this year. I've been going for about 51, 52 citizens. But our rates are better than anybody. So most of what I live is just moving out. Maybe somebody finds a better rate. But it's so hard to flip to change homeowners insurance now. And then automobiles.
Can I get a free one?
He would fall
apart
of that. There you go.
It's an NPP rate. Yes, they do.
No,
for us, we're grandfathered in, but if I got a customer, we'd like to set up everything.
New business? Yeah. If you're renting a new car?
Yeah. And no more MPP.
Yeah, I guess people were not paying attention. Yes, yes.
I don't know, but it worked really well for us. And whatever.
I just remember that. Bryce was supposed to know. He's like right now.
For anything. Yeah. It's tough.
Hey,
State Farm Agent down in South Florida.
State Farm Agent.
We sit here comparing notes.
Yeah.
He was,
nothing like it.
This is a tough time to get in.
You don't say.
This length and I, we built up, I'm sure you built up a large business, and I've got a large business, but it's hard to write a lot of new business.
By the way, what time is it close? I know we're now.
Oh, I don't know. So you gonna run the meeting?
I am, you guys, yeah, you guys.
You're a man. Hey, I really enjoyed comparing notes with you.
I'm
We got it.
It's your meeting.
We got it. Well, you're gonna run the meeting.
Why don't you join Steve?
All you gotta do is, I'd let everybody introduce themselves, even in the audience, is what I would do. And, I'd start out with asking for people to recognize the new Steve and Anna Connelly's, your council lady, my council lady, Kim Taylor's in the back there. Kim Taylor, you can sit up closer if you want to. I promise we're not gonna talk about spending a lot of money without talking to you first.
Good afternoon, everybody. If we want to kind of take our seats and or, oh, there we go. First off, I want to thank you all for being here today. I know it's the middle of the day, so we do really appreciate it. I just want to recognize we have Ann Colonisi here, who she is the Chief Resilience Officer, not Resiliency Officer, to make sure. Also, Brooke Steim is my council liaison. She's my Chief of Staff. We also have Corey Armstrong, who works with this fine gentleman next to me. Just want to do a quick...
Steve Long with Public
yep,
Works.
We got Steve Long of Public Works. We have Kim Taylor as well with the auditor's office. So, I don't, you know, talk to her if you want money. That's what we do. All right, do you just want to do quick introductions? I know we got...
She's a little tight, though, I'm going to tell you. Kim's a little tight, but at least you know if you get it, it's going to be used right. So that's...
For the record, can we just do a quick introduction?
Yeah, well, I'm Matt Carlucci, City Councilman at Large Group 4.
Jimmy Peluso, City Council District 7.
And Riverside is actually my geographical area. Why don't we introduce, let the folks in the audience introduce themselves to us so we have a record of that.
Absolutely. We could start with Mr. Long.
Steve Long, Public Works.
Ann Colonisi, Chief Resilience Officer.
Jim Schwartz, live in the neighborhood.
Okay.
Warren Jones, resident of Avondale.
Bruce Langford, resident of Villarreal.
Chris Joyce, resident of Villarreal.
Amy Mary Berger, Villarreal.
Corey Joyce, I call myself the community advocate that started all this back in 2017, just trying to get raised awareness.
Kim Taylor, council auditor for the council of Utah.
Andy Belilla, resident of Riverside and volunteer for that.
And Riverside.
All right. Councilman Carlucci, you did call this meeting. I appreciate you letting me chair it, but I now kind of want to give it to you and sort of give me a bit of a background of kind of how we got here. I'm fortunate enough to have, you know, Brooks working in my office, and I know she was working on this quite
a
while ago, too.
I kind of helped Randy DeFore at the time, who was she was a great ally to me on the council. I think the world of her and Allison, and I still do, and she should have been our general counsel. But, you know, there is this thing that we're in called politics, and, you know. Now, I promise we won't enforce council rules. If there's something we say that you don't like and you want to demonstrate with a boo, it's okay. And if you want to clap because we maybe got some good news for you, it's okay. You know, we get so tied up on trying to enforce all these rules and that the council has, and I don't think sometimes, I think council, we on the council need to remember how important these issues are to people right there in their home. And so they just may want to clap, but so we'll be flexible with that. I was involved, frankly, I was fishing out on Six Mile Creek, fly fishing, and I got a call from Wayne Weaver calls me. Well, that's one I'm going to answer immediately, right? And Wayne says, well, I see y'all getting another pump station over in San Marco, and I don't think we have any over here in Riverside. And I said, you know, Wayne, I think you're right. I don't think there is one over there. And San Marco and Riverside both share
the same kind of problems. I'm getting a shake of the head no, but from an insurance perspective, just let me tell you, I have seen flooding on both sides of the river depending on which way the wind's blowing in a spring storm or whatever. And so I told Wayne I would take a look, and I saw where a study for Riverside was out 5 years, and Randy was trying to get that moved up, but she was having a difficult time doing it, so I pitched in and helped with her, and Miss Joyce was part of that, and some of y'all may have been at the meeting. And I think Jimmy did this. He got the study moved up. I don't think it's for this year, but I think it's for next year.
Nope,
it's for this year. Okay, good. And but the thing is our chief resilience officer, who will talk about this some today. Steve needs to talk about it. She's got a citywide study going, so we need to make sure that these two dovetail together. And I'm not sure if the pump stations we have in San Marco is what Riverside needs, but Riverside needs help, and I know that. And ironically, I have several policyholders in Riverside, and I won't say who, but one name you would really know who it was, and he owns a very expensive top-of-the-line Mercedes-Benz, and it flooded under Beau Rivage, and along with a lot of other cars. I've had docks, during storms where the water didn't really exceed over the bulkhead, but just the mere power of the waves that hit the bulkhead. And when they hit that bulkhead, that means they bounce off, and they're just as strong coming back almost as they are moving forward. So I've had two or three policyholders' docks wind up in their backyard. And that's why I got involved in the resiliency issue, was because as an insurance agent, we know that it is forecasted, welcome, that there will be more frequent and more severe hurricanes and storms to come along and flooding. So the good news is when Jimmy became the council member, I had already, loosened up the idea of moving the study up. But Jimmy really is your district council person, and he did the work of making sure that it got moved up to where it is. And we don't want that study to conflict with the efforts that the city, big city study is doing, that Ms. Condalise is putting together with her team. But we want to hope that it at least helps focus a bit, because I got to tell you, I've been doing State Farm insurance like Mr. Langford. He's a retired State Farm agent back there. But I've been doing this 42 years. I cannot tell you how many times I've had to go out with my rubber boots I bought 35, 40 years ago. I still got them. And I have to go out and right after the storm. And it may not be a hurricane. It may just be a bad northeaster, or it may be the winds coming from the other direction, and tropical storm, and Riverside has flooding. Matter of fact, there's four blocks along Riverside Avenue that don't even have drainage, period. And it's no criticism of the city. It's just an old area, It's just old, and I've been told there's a four-block area that just doesn't have a drainage system at all. But we have people here, Steve, along with Public Works and Ms. Condalise, who are hopefully going to help us solve this problem and bring a remedy. I don't know what the remedy is going to be. I don't want us all to get to think it's got to be a pump station. It might be a pump station, it might not be, but there's a remedy that smart people like Mr. Long and Ms. Connelise know about. So Jimmy, that's the background, and I've been staying in touch with my friend Wayne Weaver and telling him that we're making progress inch by inch. And I just want to say one other thing. It is amazing to me. I want you to think about this. Wayne Weaver calls me, and now, if he was still owner of the Jaguars 20 years ago, he probably could have got something done a little quicker. You think so? You know, but he's not, and he doesn't expect it. He's the most unassuming, humble. I can almost tear up about how much I love him and Dolores Weaver. He's not demanding. He's just like, but can't we do something over here? Because he saw what we were doing in San Marco. And I thought, you know, it's amazing how somebody who has contributed hundreds of millions of dollars to this city, and he's having a hard time getting a damn study through, moved up on the CIP. If it was Shad Khan, I suspect. Yeah, I mean, yeah, I'm just saying. So, you know what? Everybody ought to be treated equally, no matter who you are. If you're a big shot, you should get the same treatment as a little shot, and vice versa. That's just the way I believe. And so, God bless Wayne, and he's never, he says, I won't call you again. I don't, look, Wayne, you call me anytime. But Jimmy, that's the background. I'm done. you can take it from there, brother.
Thank you, Councilman Carlucci. You are not done, I don't think. You're going to be saying plenty more today, I'm sure of it. And never be done, good sir. We thank you for everything you've done. Your council district before, your at-large district, had all of Riverside, Avondale, and I think it expanded even a little more north. I think now your council district has, I think, just parts of Riverside, Avondale, and then I think the other one that Chris Miller has. So for you to still put so much attention and time into this is hugely important, especially if you got someone like Chris is new, and yeah, as am I. All that to say, I mean, we've got a great timeline here that I kind of wanted to go through real quick. Just kind of give people an idea of, you know, how slow the wheels of government can be, but how progress is actually being made. And we are blessed to have both Steve and Ann here that I hope can likely speak to what studies have already been conducted and what this new study that we put in the CIP might look like. So obviously 2019, we had Councilmember DeFore really start bringing this to the forefront. I'm going to skip ahead a little bit, but basically in 2022, the study was able to be put into the CIP, right? The capital improvement budget is, for lack of a better word, the good budget. That's the one where all the good stuff is. And that's where you could see, you know, major park improvements, street improvements, bridges, roads, you know, those major marquee projects. It's for any project that's over 100,000, right, Councilman Carlucci?
Yes.
So this study was placed in there. And the biggest dilemma that one might find in this, it's a five-year budget. The biggest dilemma that one might find is if you don't get your item into one of those 5 years, you're placed in the beyond five-year area. So the fact that Councilwoman DeFore was able to move it into, I think it was the 25-26 item was a huge deal. Now, because I was relatively engaged with RAP and I was engaged with Councilwoman DeFore in the past, I knew about this study pretty early on. And given that we had seen the progress that San Marco, you know, was able to make with their pump station and the great work that you have done, you know, I kind of hoped, hey, maybe we can sneak in this study this upcoming fiscal year. And whether or not the stars aligned or whether or not we had a lot of brand new council members that didn't know what the hell they were doing, I was able to move it up into this year.
Well, you got to understand that we're two Italians and, yeah. You know, you never know when something's going to happen magically.
So we were very fortunate to be able to get it moved up. With that said, we not only have a study that could be done this year, and I want to see what, Steve and Ann might want to say about that. I also want to discuss the fact that DOT, because they're doing improvements on State Road 211, We have Representative Wyman Duggan to thank because he asked them to also do a study. So have these been passed around, Brooks and Corey?
Yeah.
All right, cool. All right. So you know, I don't know if you guys want to sit here and go through a 13-page document real quick. Oh, please.
State your name, please.
And thank you for saying that. And you're right. And that was incredibly wise of Councilwoman DeFore, because we all knew State Road 211 was going to get done anyway. So to bring in your state representative and say, hey, rather than us go through the CIP process and have to wait several years, now we can hopefully fast track this on the back of a state project. And they're spending lots of money on that road. So $250 to them is, you know, kind of nothing. So we're fortunate enough that we did receive this study, as I'm sure all of you saw. But to that end, we've got this study. We have a potential another study that could be conducted based on the CIP. I did want to see if Steve, sorry, I just called it. So I want to see if one of you can kind of, or both of you can kind of come up and speak to what this study does and doesn't do, and if this scratches the itch to start moving on stuff, or is there wisdom in using the CIP dollars that we have to maybe expand what the study is and kind of where we can go from there. And that's truly something that I don't know. So I'm eager and excited to hear what you have to say.
Yes, sir. Thank you for the opportunity. Steve sure. Long, Public Works. Basically, you know, just looking at the time frame, you know, remember all these meetings almost, you know, most of them, Public Works was in attendance. The first thing Public Works did when we were post-Irma, post-Matthew type time frame, we became aware of the issues with the drainage, the tides coming back through the system. So one of the things you'll see on here is we went through and we installed flex valves, tidal flex valves, on the connection points along Copeland, Osceola, and Stockton Street.
Is a flex valve like a check valve?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
To stop the tides from coming back through the pipe systems. We've been out there numerous times and found, you know, to do checks on those valves. The one limitation and downside of them is if you have debris in your system after a storm, a beer can, a limb, it can get in that flex valve, and when it goes to close, it can actually keep it from closing.
Are you suggesting the people of Riverside are drinking beer on the street?
Coca-Cola can.
There we go.
Coca-Cola can, sorry. But, you know, it can get in the system, keep it from closing, and it presents an issue. So we've been out multiple times and checked those, cleaned them, cleared them, that sort of thing. One of the things where we're at right now, an improvement we're going to be doing in the relatively near future, and that's this year, is on the Stockton Street line. Right now we have three valves on that system because there are two sections with inlets that connect directly to the river. They both have valves on them. Then we have the line from Riverside Avenue and further to the north that comes down as a trunk line that's a completely separate line, and there's a valve on it. Well, what ends up happening is when you have these valves in place, you got to have an upstream manhole and a downstream manhole so you have access to clean and clear it.
This is all gravity drains?
These are all gravity drains.
Okay.
And so what we have found is the trunk line, the downstream manhole, there are times when the river stages up. It doesn't come over to bulkhead, but it stages up higher than the roadway, and we've been out there and we physically observed water coming out of the manhole lid. Mm-hmm. It doesn't go past the check valve, and based on the elevation of Stockton, it doesn't come out of the system because the next inlet up is at a high enough elevation. It doesn't, but it will flood the end of Stockton Street. So what we've done is we've been looking for products, and we have found a manhole lid that we can bolt on that's waterproof. So we're going to be changing that downstream manhole cover to a waterproof cover to prevent water from coming out of that system at all. So it won't be allowed to flow back upstream, and it won't come out of the manhole that's on the downstream side of that valve. So that'll help alleviate some of the issues that are seen on a fairly frequent basis at the end of Stockton Street. So that's one of the immediate things we have. Okay. Councilmember Carlucci, do you have
something? Well, through our chair here, does that happen because the shutoff valve at the bulkhead has something pinned in between it, and that's what's allowing the water to go through? Or if those valves, or if those I forget what we were calling them, check valves or whatever,
yes,
that you know, kind of flap down and keep the water from coming in, how does water still keep coming through the manhole?
Right, because the manhole we're talking about is between the river and the valve. So when the river rises above the elevation of the surface of the ground, it starts trying to find ways to get out. Mm-hmm. The joints on the pipe are sealed, but manhole covers, just the way they're made, if you get enough pressure from the river, it will actually raise the manhole cover up and it can come out. There's holes in manhole covers. It can come out of the holes. It can present any number of issues. We've seen them where the pressure gets so much, it'll, not necessarily this one, but it'll take a manhole cover and dislodge it. Then you have a hole in the road that somebody can get hurt. So that's why we're going to this new approach. So that way it'll be waterproofed, it'll be sealed, it'll be bolted on. Yeah. So that way we don't get that. It's not over top of the bulkhead, but that way we don't have water coming out of this manhole and still filling up the end of Stockton Street.
Well, if it ever breaks those wells, I'm telling you, it's going to look like Old Faithful.
If it does. But the thing about that is, if it was to get enough pressure to do that,
yeah,
it's overtopped the bulkhead, and yeah, then you don't have any pressure on the line at all, because once you've overtopped the bulkhead, it's,
yeah,
you know, you're covered. So that's where we are today with the study itself.
Can you just go back to the manhole? When do we intend for those to be installed?
That's this year, and we're within the next 6 months that's going to be installed. We've got a series of them we're doing.
Now, when they're installed, is it okay, Mr. Chair, if I ask the question?
You may speak freely, okay. Councilman Carlucci.
When they're installed, what could the neighbors in this particular area expect? What would the expectations of the neighborhood be?
For the construction, or
will be a noticeable difference?
Well, will it help with the flooding?
It will help with the water on dry days that will stand sometimes at the end of Stockton Street. This will have no impact on the flooding that happens on State Road 211 Riverside Avenue. This is an immediate thing, because we've been out there and seen too many times on a dry day water is standing at the end of Stockton Street, because during Florida Georgia, we had tides reaching elevation 2.3, 2.4 NAVD, and we were seeing then we had water all over that were outside of inlets, at that point we saw water outside of this manhole, mm-hmm, standing at the end. So that'll alleviate that. On dry days, you won't have standing water. So that's what that will solve.
Well, that's a start.
That's an immediate thing, so I just wanted people to know that that's coming. The second part is the actual study. And the study is a little bit more in-depth. Shouldn't say a little more. It's much more in-depth. But one of the things, when we go through the study, we're going to be looking at solutions to city roads to make sure our city roads don't flood. As a benefit, it may help the Riverside Avenue system. We are going to have the goal of Riverside Avenue being solved, but from where that's a state road, as we get ready to move past the study, that may be a coordination effort with DOT.
Which is a state road?
Riverside Avenue.
Yeah, that's 211.
Yes, sir. That's the the major flooding is Riverside Avenue.
95.
Right. And that's why Jim Knight from DOT has been in a majority of these meetings in the past.
Okay. So to that end, right? So we don't think the study went far enough? We're definitely going to do our own?
Yes, sir. What they've given us is a nice start.
Okay.
What we do will be similar but more in-depth, because when we get ready to do something, we'll look further up those trunk lines as they go up Osceola, as they go up Stockton.
Okay.
But what ends up happening is, at the end of the day, whatever solution we come up with, we want to make sure it covers the area as a whole. Then we have the other part of it, and I'm going to let Ann talk about it, because in addition to the study, we have plans specific to this site. She's doing a much larger study that also includes this area. It's called a compound flooding study. And so I'm going to let her talk about the compound flooding component of it.
Okay. Hey, thank you, Mr. Long, for being here.
Thank you.
We appreciate it. Ms. Colonisi.
Hi, everyone. Ann Colonisi, Chief Resilience Officer. I'm going to have a hard time because I'm going to want to look at all of you and you guys up here. I'll do my best. I appreciate your remarks, Councilman Carlucci, at the offset, because I think it's really important to me that we make it clear that flooding anywhere in Jacksonville is something that the city takes really seriously. But also, given the fact that our city is so large, given that we have more linear miles of shoreline than any other city in the U.S., the fact that we have an ocean, beach communities, we have the intercoastal, we have the lower St. John's and 59 major tributaries, the form that that flooding can take varies depending on where you're standing in the city, and the solutions that are needed can also vary. And so I'll get to the specific site and how we're going to be tailoring kind of something specifically for this area of Riverside, but I want to start a little bit higher level and make it clear that we need a faster, more efficient way to figure out what the right solution is for all corners of our city and county. And we're leaning heavily on data to expedite how we're able to make those assessments and those decisions. As Steve mentioned, we are putting together a probabilistic compound flood model, and I know those are a lot of words, but I think it's helpful to understand the types of flooding that we can see. We can see, as Steve talked about, sunny day flooding from extreme high tides or king tides. We can see storm surge, where we have a hurricane or a high wind event that's actually pushing water into either the main St. John's River system or into different tributary networks. We can see riverine flooding, where our tributaries are rising, either typically from rainfall and overspilling their banks and getting into homes and cars. And then we can see stormwater flooding, where that rainfall is not making it into a tributary. It may not even be making it into an underground drainage line, and it's causing localized flooding on a street or sidewalk or a park or in homes. And all four of those can happen in isolation, or you can get two or more of those that happen at one time. And we currently do not have an efficient way to determine what happens when we get a combination of flood events. And we know that more often than not, we're seeing these events layered. So it's not just about what category of storm is heading our way, but what direction is that storm coming? How is wind influencing that surge? Mm-hmm. And also, is it hitting at high tide or low tide? And so what we're developing is a probabilistic model. We'll look at 10,000 different flood scenarios, different storm angles, different rainfall events, different sea level rise scenarios, and how all of our different flood conditions are influenced by wind and by each other. And that will allow us to have a foundation for how we can start making smarter capital decisions. The other thing I'll mention is that in addition to developing this model, this huge data repository, we're also looking at two attachments to it. One is going to be a real-time forecasting system where we'll be able, it'll have software that'll automatically scrub National Weather Service data in advance, in hours and days in advance of a storm, and plug the anticipated tide, anticipated rainfall amount, wind speed, and direction into the model as the model inputs, and quickly run out an output and a map. So we can actually see before a storm where we're likely to experience flooding. The second thing that's going to attach to this model is a decision support tool, and I think that's going to be the piece that's really relevant to this group. What that'll allow us to do is evaluate different scenarios and different solutions and allow us to actually compare apples to oranges. So there's been a lot of talk about pump stations, and I think just from my personal background, I spent a number of years in New Orleans, which is a city that is entirely mechanically drained, so I've had a lot of exposure to pump stations. I know the good and I know the bad, and I know when they can work. Every drop of rainfall that falls in New Orleans actually has to be pumped twice, once to get it into a canal efficiently, and then it goes through that canal to the perimeter levee system, and it's pumped out and over. It's a very complicated process. What I can say is that pumps are expensive. They take a lot of staff to operate. They take a lot of money to maintain, and they break. And so I think we have to be very intentional about when we think about using that solution. And it could be that for this area of Riverside, that is either the solution or a component of a solution. But what this decision support tool will allow us to do is also evaluate different combinations of green infrastructure, bioswales, culverts, places to store water, so that when we get a compound event in Riverside, which is really what the main issue is, if it's not the sunny day flooding that Steve outlined, what we're seeing is those tidal valves closing because of high tide. And then you're seeing all of this localized flooding because suddenly all of the rain that's falling in that watershed and going into those main drainage lines can't get out to the river until after the tide drops and the area gravitationally drains. We could fight that gravitational drainage by raising bulkheads and pumping out and over. And again, that could be the solution that we ultimately go for. But green infrastructure costs dramatically less than pump stations. The maintenance costs and operations costs are substantially lower, and there are more co-benefits. You can use They can be used as park space when it's not raining. Usually there's natural landscaping, removing of concrete, and that can have cooling benefits for neighborhoods. There's evidence to show that property values rise when green infrastructure solutions are deployed in a neighborhood. And so this decision support tool will allow us to look at different types of green infrastructure in the larger watershed to see if there's a benefit to slowing the flow of water to these critical pinch points when we have a high tide event. So I think this study, the money that's set aside in the CIP, will be a really wonderful layer after the decision support tool. So we can use that decision support tool to crank out some really quick estimates of the effectiveness of different solutions. And then from there, we'll have a better sense of what needs to be studied in what level of detail. And it could come down to one pump station, it could come down to a combination, but again, this decision support tool will allow us to have a greater level of confidence before we go into very detailed design, construction, and implementation. So that's the way that I think this is going to be a wonderful case study, and in fact, the team that's developing the compound flood model is already aware of this area. They're looking at it, and they know it's actually one of the first places where we are going to be deploying the decision support tool, because we know that both, you know, Riverside Ave, Stockton, are critical roadways through this neighborhood, but also St. Vincent's Hospital is there. So it's a natural place to consider, you know, this specific combination of compound flooding. We'll also be looking across the city at other kind of combinations of compound flooding that look a little different from Riverside to also use as early case studies and tests of how the decision support tool can help us find solutions. And so I think it's going to be really exciting to have then the additional funding in the CIP to go into the robust design, construction, and implementation. And I think that'll allow us to prove concept and then get very quickly into a solution for the neighborhood.
Awesome.
One other thing I'll add, if I may, is that the team that is developing our compound flood model is actually, it's a very elite team led by the Water Institute out of Louisiana that's led the Louisiana Watershed Initiative. They've done this level of compound flood modeling for not just Louisiana, but also are currently doing that for the state of Texas and the island of Puerto Rico. They're one of the only U.S. entities that have done this level of compound flood analysis at the scale and size of Jacksonville. And they'll also have Deltaris, which is a Dutch-based firm, on their project team, and Deltaris is known internationally as an incredible hydrologic experts. And so we'll have them here, and then we'll have local engineering support with HAF. So it's going to be a really incredible way to take the best kind of available science nationally and internationally and apply it locally in Jacksonville. For folks who are here who want more details, we're planning a webinar in January that'll get into the methodology, the models that are being used, and into early discussions of the decision support tool. So I think that will be a great place for people to ask those more technical questions. I don't have a full presentation prepared on that today, but conceptually, I can at least talk about where we're going.
No, that's awesome. I, Councilman Carlucci, would you like to make a few comments?
It may be other ways to do it besides pump stations. One thing about pump stations is sometimes they take a long time to get done because you got to find the property where the big tank goes, where the water goes, then it gets pumped out into the river. And in these dense areas like San Marcos and Riverside, I mean, LaSalle, that's been waiting for a long time. Landon and Children's Way, which came on my watch back 20-some-odd years ago when I was a district councilman in San Marco, we got this done pretty quick because we found the property. Nemours Hospital said, use our property. That's fine, because they were flooding over there. But so we kind of know what pump stations are because, you know, that's what we've been used to. You're taking Jacksonville into a more future-minded way of handling this stuff. So when I hear you talk about finding different ways to do it, I'm not sure what that looks like. I'd like to know, and I think maybe some of the folks would like to know what to expect. Is it swales? Is it what all is it that could help it in addition to the pump stations?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, I'm not sitting up here saying that pump stations are inherently not the solution. It's absolutely something we're evaluating.
Right, yeah.
And we're going to evaluate different sizes and scales and deployment of pump stations and different sizes and scales and deployment of green infrastructure. Green infrastructure can be large and it can be very, very small. Anything that removes pavement and increases permeability can absorb rainwater and slow the flow. But given the high volumes, I think likely for this area, what we'll be looking at is a combination of bioswales along the right-of-way and also looking at underutilized surface parking lots and parks in not just these blocks, but actually the entire area around it. Because again, these are the endpoints of a larger basin of drainage. And so anywhere in the basin that you can hold and retain water during an acute event, waiting for the tides to go down and allowing it to drain, can help alleviate the level of end user flooding that we see. And the nice thing about that is a pump station really only helps the acute place that you're having all of that drainage collect. But by dispersing green infrastructure, and again, we're going to let the data and our model and the decision support tool tell us the level of effectiveness. But I think it's important to start using these as measures to make these decisions, because we're going to see tidal flooding become more prevalent across Jacksonville, and the need to deploy these flaps that we have and these valves, check valves, that are already in Riverside in more parts of the city. And I think we need to have a better way of talking about, well, what happens when you have a lot of rainfall when the tide is high and that valve is closed? This is going to become a very common, potentially chronic issue across the city. And so not every place can have a $77 million pump station. Now, that doesn't mean we won't have it here. There's a hospital. There's a lot of reasons why that might be the correct solution for this area. But having a methodology where we can evaluate and look at how combinations of green infrastructure, combinations of gray infrastructure like pumps and like bulkheads will allow us to find the right solution for each area. And like I said earlier, green infrastructure can have more co-benefits. So if we're going to be putting $77 million, let's get more than just moving water one direction. Let's get beautiful, vibrant parks. Let's get places that are valuable and infrastructure that has a use beyond when it's raining.
Well, I mean, if I may, the Hogan's Creek restoration, right? I mean, the amount of sunny day flooding that's over by the Maxwell House, over by Intuition and all that, I mean, you could see it every single day. And as I understand it, with the Hogan's Creek work that they're going to be doing, a lot of green infrastructure that's not only going to allow for a flooding option, and it's also going to allow for the Emerald Trail to be able to use that property, for us to use. Like, is that an example of kind of green? Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I said, there have been examples. I'm mostly familiar with a couple of local neighborhood green infrastructure projects in New Orleans where we actually saw documentation that property values rose because of the presence of these parks. They were beautiful. They were effective. And they really changed the narrative on flooding in that neighborhood. They solved the problem, but they also were these beautiful, vibrant community assets outside of their function for flood control. And I think that's worth considering, especially in a beautiful historic neighborhood like Riverside. And again, we know that we're dealing with more issues than just flooding from climate. We're dealing with these hotter, more prevalent heat waves each summer. And so anything we can do for native landscaping, I think, is worth having in this same conversation. And again, because we have funding, thanks to the CIP and your efforts to move it up, I think once we have the compound flood model up and running, which should be towards the end of this summer,
okay.
This is again going to be one of the early outputs. It's the full compound flood model is a 2-year effort, but we've indicated that we want this to be one of the priority areas that's focused on because we do know we have the secondary funding to go through the full life stream of how we would make these decisions.
There's a big study that's going to go on, but one of the priority areas is going to be where these folks live here.
Yeah, and again, I want to be clear, it's not because we are valuing certain neighborhoods over others, but because there's a hospital, this is already a very chronic issue mm-hmm. and a very visible issue, and because there is funding to then take these early outputs of the model and move into implementation more quickly, and so we want to expedite that. But I want to be very clear, every single corner of the city will be looked at in this, and that's really important to me that we start seeing our blind spots before they happen.
You're in a safe space. We can say that this is the best part.
As an at-large councilman, I'm very happy to hear that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So the compound flood model, that's going to be done at the end of the year. Does that mean we shouldn't?
No, it's going to, this, we'll be able to start using it in this context towards the end of the year, but gotcha. It's a full 2-year process.
So when do we start this actual Riverside study?
I think likely we'll have enough information next fall to figure out what the next steps are and kind of appropriate that funding in this line item of the CIP. I think there's going to need to be frequent contact between the compound flood model development team and whatever team is working on the more focused design and construction and implementation of the solutions. But I think that process and that conversation can begin in the early fall.
I missed. Please.
Excuse me. I am thinking that as we transition to letting the folks ask some questions, I've seen some hands raised out there. It might be well for you and for Mr. Long to come sit up here, or you can sit over there, wherever, sure. So they can use the podium where they can get their questions on the record.
While people are moving, Ms. Taylor, so because it was appropriated this year, we're able to do it if it goes into fiscal year next year, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Welcome to the dais.
There you go.
Okay. All right, excellent. I just want to make sure that.
Good job.
Yeah, I mean, the timetable's a little bit longer than I expected, but knowing that we've got this compound flood model that's moving forward and the decision support tool that we're working towards, I do understand. To that end, what questions do we have from members of the public? Oh, yeah, please, Mr. Long.
One thing I want to make clear, when we start our study on the tail end of that compound modeling study, what we're going to be looking at is options like everybody got a handout over there where DOT said a $77 million pump station. Well, when they're showing that, they're showing the pipes right now that go to the river, every single bit of that water going into that pump station. So therefore, you need a pump station, heavy-duty pumps. You know, typically, there's 4 pumps. We've got some with 5 that would be pumping out every bit of water that falls in Riverside. So our study is going to be using information from Ann's study, but also looking at the area. And one of the things like we would do is we would look at the elevation of the bulkhead currently. And there's bulkhead on city-owned property. There's bulkhead private properties. The lowest one controls it because water will come over the lowest one, go around, go wherever it goes. But if say those bulkheads, and I'm just using a theoretical elevation 4, what we may look to do to reduce cost of something like this is we may look at the area, and as we're doing our surveying, find all of the open inlets that are below elevation 4. And if pump station's the answer, we take everything below elevation 4 and take it into the pump station. As we know, these lines go up to Oak Street, they go up to Park Street, they keep going. All of that land sits much higher. So if that's well above the elevation of these bulkheads, they're not having any sort of flooding from tidal elevations or anything like that. If they were to experience flooding, it would be from an Irma or something of that nature. You get to Irma, none of these drainage systems work. You have Irma. Irma goes away after 2 days. They recover. They start working again. But what that would do is things above those type of elevations, above, you know, potentially that elevation when you have it at the bulkhead, if we ran those trunk lines still by gravity to the river, took out all the water that was below elevation 4, put it into a pump station, it would allow us to have a pump station that protects everything that's at the bulkhead or lower, so that it's all protected and it drains well, while still allowing gravity systems. And that would, that's the type of thing we'll be looking at in our study, so that we can get a product that works, but a product that is as reasonable a price as we can. We're willing to spend what it takes to fix a problem, but we're not looking to spend three times as much as we need to potentially. So while DOT study is, it's good information, a lot of good background in it, it's taking water from areas that are at elevation 15 upstream that don't need to really go into a pump station. So that's, I just wanted to clarify that for everybody. So you may end up having parallel drainage systems going, one's gravity and then one's going into a pump station to protect the lower elevations.
No, that's excellent. I'm glad you put that out there.
It's just a cost saving kind of measure.
Thank you. So to that end, are we planning on getting a third party to do this study, or will the city of Jacksonville do the study?
We'll be working with a contractor, and what we will do is we will have that contract in place, a PO issued, well in advance of Ann's study being completed, so that way there's no time lapse. We may be doing things such as getting survey data while Ann's still doing her work.
Okay.
So that way we aren't sitting here twiddling our thumbs waiting for something to end before we get started. That's not the intent at all. It's, we'll be doing preliminary work so that the minute Ann's done and says, hey, here's what we've got, even if it's not final information, she may have pretty thorough preliminary information. We'll take that and then we'll start the site-specific work.
Great.
On our end.
You read my mind. That's exactly what I was concerned by. I was like, don't tell me we're going to start the bid process in like September or October. So thank you for putting it out there.
Yes, sir.
Are there questions from the audience? Warren, go ahead.
I need you to come up here to the microphone, so anybody that's got a question, it'll get on record.
Warren Emmett Jones. Thank you very much for your presentations. Really appreciate it. I just wanted to remind the council members that there is somewhere in the system right now a process where Willow Branch Park will be renovated, that water system. As you know, or may not know, after the hurricane, a study was done, and Mr. Long, I think you were along with Councilmember DeFore, where we looked at the drainage from Riverside and Avondale, and most of it goes through Willow Branch Park. It seemed to be a surprise to some people, but the work that was done at Willow Branch and St. John's is not greenscaped, as you know. There is, though, this discussion about phase two and phase three. This park would be a perfect place to do the greenscaping. So I just wanted to make sure that everybody was aware that that's in discussion somewhere. I don't know where it is in the time frame, but as you're doing your study, there may be these other groups looking at drainage systems in that area.
Yeah, absolutely, and thank you for bringing that up. I think my understanding of Willow Branch is that on a regular basis, all of these different networks of underground pipes draining to Willow Branch does not cause Willow Branch to rise to level that it's overspilling its banks. And so, in my opinion, that's a really well-functioning green infrastructure solution already. There's a lot of capacity already there. So I think that's a good example of the types of basins we may need to manually create, and other parts of the city that may not have a creek system that are, you know, naturally occurring, but where we may want large amounts of rainwater to be able to be captured and held and slowly released. So I think it's a good thing to raise, and I do think Willow Branch is also a great example of the fact that if that's where all this area is draining to, it's also a park that people enjoy and think is incredibly beautiful and a wonderful public asset. And so how can we create more things like that in other parts of Riverside and other parts of the city writ large? It's going to be something we're looking to develop solutions for and standardize them and deploy them across the city.
I'm glad you brought that up, Warren, because, Willow Branch is one of the other ones similar to Hogan's Creek that I'm like, we're doing work now that's going to be a part of that solution already, which is good. And half is the firm that's actually doing this work in Willow Branch, correct?
That's my understanding.
All right, yeah. So it's the same folks that are doing some of the work that you have got contracted.
Yeah, and my understanding is Half's involved in Hogan's Creek and some of the detailed modeling that's been done there. A thing that's important to note, and again, the webinar that we do about the compound flood model and methodology will be kind of the right place to get for, you know, our engineers in the room to get the more granular details. But my understanding is everything that's going into the compound flood model can also have higher levels of resolution added as we determine kind of more focused projects. So Hogan's Creek, the modeling that Half has already done, is at the highest level of granularity, a step down from what our compound flood model will be, but that can all be housed in a single repository. So this is something that's going to be very iterative, something that can build on itself, which again is really important if we want to make sure we're all on the same page and that we're being really good stewards of public funding, that let's get this larger citywide thing and then have the ability as we get projects online to add in additional layers.
Excellent. Yeah. So we have go for it.
And to kind of just the engineering division within Public Works is working on those future phases right now. One of the things they're doing is they're working with the Parks Department and the community. You've got that channel going through there. You got some of those beautiful trees that are in relatively close proximity. So it's that open it up, save the trees. It's that finding that sweet spot where you may sacrifice a few trees while opening up some. So they're working on that now, and that's a current project.
Thank you for mentioning that. We have about 5 minutes left on our actual time frame, so please get questions in. So we can extend a little bit, but we don't want to extend too long.
I'm Eric Olson, engineering consultant, but I'm also a resident of the Riverside area. For purposes of the councilman, the two of you, I want to clarify a couple things. The construction cost of what the DOT has done to date is not $77 million. The construction cost is $31 million. You wonder where the rest of it comes in. I think it's basically a funny number. But the DOT has done us a real favor here because they have conceptualized a solution to a very specific flooding problem. Now, it's a part of a resiliency issue, but it's more of a flooding problem that affects this section of roadway. And the rhetorical question to the DOT a couple years ago was, if this is a state roadway, why are you not responsible for the inability of traffic being able to use it? So they have done this. Steve is right that this is a low-level study, but it's actually very good. The drainage basin that we're serving here is only 40 acres. We're not serving a huge drainage basin. It is the drainage basin that adversely affects Riverside Avenue. And that is to say that the existing infrastructure is so small, so outdated, and so under capacity that the water ends up flooding and then ultimately dissipates. This solution puts in much larger infrastructure. The drainage culvert systems are more than double than what's there now. It ultimately ends up with a re-drainage system for everything between Osceola and Bar Street, and including Stockton. It addresses this specific drainage area, which is problematic, that creates this flooding problem. Interestingly enough, it has pumping stations that have no real estate requirements. It's pretty shrewd. The pumping stations are within the right-of-way of Stockton Street at the bulkhead below grade. There's no real estate problems, which is a major issue in San Marco. They're not huge like the ones in San Marco. And it's the type of strategic drainage solutions that probably have more merit in the future. That is to say that you solve specific area drainage issues. Unlike San Marco, where you're actually addressing much larger areas spatially, much more acreage. So it's a very smart solution. I think the costs are extremely conservative. The actual construction cost, like I say, is a little over $30 million. And even that is a future cost. So it's got multiplier upon multiplier in it. But the DOT has done us a real favor here by coming up with a succinct solution for this specific area. We're not addressing Avondale Riverside, okay? And that can be addressed in the $250,000 study. This is probably a $50,000 study, but again, it's a pretty smart study. and it hones in on the actual problem that we're trying to address here. It won't be resolved by compound modeling. It won't be redressed by a mega study of the city itself. You know, it's not going to be solved by swales. It's going to be solved by 60-inch culverts instead of 30-inch culverts with some way to get the water to the river. The authors of this were smart enough to say that, yes, it doesn't work when the water comes over the bulkhead. It's not designed to do that. It's not a mega resiliency solution. It's a flood solution, okay? But they also will point out that, yeah, but when the water recedes to the cap of the bulkhead, it will at least drain this area relatively rapidly of water that maybe was associated with a storm or a surge such as we had with Irma. So it's a pretty slick solution. It is specific to the area, and it's something that probably should not be obfuscated within the scope of a larger study, having compound modeling, et cetera, et cetera. I work with Delterris. I do that type of modeling. My firm does. I know I requested compound modeling when the resiliency study was being done with respect to the type of storms that we had with Irma, because that's not in the FEMA study results that we have that the city has adopted. And hopefully that will be done within the study that Ann is talking about, rather than just compound studies and tributaries. That's a no-brainer.
I don't mean to interrupt you.
That's fine.
You are definitely a very smart guy. You must be an engineer.
I'm a coastal engineer. I've been practicing 45 years.
Yeah, okay, that's what I figured.
I'm still practicing.
I've been practicing insurance for 45 years.
I'll get it right one of these days.
Yeah, me too. We're probably past time. I don't like these hard stops. I want to. Yeah, if you want to reply, but we need to give some of the people a chance. They're back there. They want to speak because this is what's affecting them.
I understand.
So,
I just didn't want you to misunderstand some of the comments and some of the interpretations of the DOT study. You can read it for yourself. It's a quick study. It's pretty straightforward, and I embrace it conceptually. Embrace the cost.
Yeah. Oh, listen, thank you very much. And Ms. Connelly-C, did you have something you want to say?
No, I do have to run in just a couple minutes.
Okay.
For maybe 3.
You can walk. You don't have to run.
First of all, my name is Jim Schwarz. I'm a resident in that area, also on the Villa Riva Flooding and Drainage Committee, a position of high honor with Eric and a couple of my neighbors. First of all, I want to thank Councilman Peluso, Councilman Carlucci, for your work on this. I know you got a lot of people making demands on you, and I appreciate you bringing people together to think about this. This really is a complex situation, and it is complex topographically, because we have to decide, is it a bowl or is it a slope? It is complex hydrologically. We have to understand the height of the river, where the water is going to drain, things like that. It is complex jurisdictionally, because from the start we were told when Lori started writing, Mayor Curry and Councilman DeFore, the first thing we were told by the city is, well, Riverside Avenue is not a city street, so sorry, we can't do anything about it. So jurisdictionally, it's been a challenge for us, and politically, obviously, as you said earlier, you can't avoid that these days. I guess I've got a few comments in response to some of the things that have already been said that I just want to get into our thinking here for this, and then a question. First comment is regarding the tidal valves or the flex valves. I'm not a coastal engineer, but I live in the area and I observe what's happening. What we noticed is that after the tidal valves, the flex valves were put in, the flooding on Riverside Avenue from rain events, nothing to do with high water in the river, the flooding on Riverside Avenue from rain events, observationally, got much worse. I had a number of email correspondences with people in Public Works. I asked them, is there any chance that adding a valve in a pipe, if you take a pipe that's a certain diameter and you put something in the middle of that, is that going to decrease the amount of water flow? And I was assured by the engineers that that would not be the case. October 15th, 2021, we had FDOT come out, as well as some people from the city. We described to them what we were seeing. We described the situation where it seemed to be getting much worse. And the engineer from FDOT said like that, oh, of course, it's the tidal valves making it worse. So I think we have to look at, again, it's the complexity of the situation. I think the tidal valves are contributing to the rain not being able to drain as quickly as it used to. There's other things, compound flooding, there's a lot of things involved, but that is one of the things that has made the situation worse. Mr. Long referenced that there's water coming out of the manholes. There's also a drain that is right where the check valve was put in. Water comes out of that drain, okay? So I'm not sure that bolting down the manholes is going to solve the problem. I just want to get that on the record. To your point earlier, we have been told by the state that there is no drainage infrastructure under Riverside Avenue, State Road 211, between basically Osceola and, or is it I think it's like Osceola and Barr. Okay, there is no drainage infrastructure under that, which is another thing that contributes to this problem. I don't think any of us are saying that the solution has to be a pump station, but we have not heard any other great solutions at this point. Totally understand the difference between a bowl and a slope, but right now Riverside Avenue, when it is raining, Riverside Avenue is a trough. It's not a bowl, it's a trough. Either way, the water is gathering there and is not able to drain out on its own. So those are my comments. My question or concern, as you have seen, and I appreciate you, Corey, putting the timeline together. We've been working on this for a long time. During one of the periods, it was after the 2021 meeting, and we were kind of waiting for some results to come out of that from either the city or the state, and it was just about the time that our new chief resiliency officer came on board and was beginning to talk about putting a plan together, and we were told through city council that nothing was going to happen in terms of addressing our issue until the chief resiliency officer's plan was finally put together, which would come out like it was about 15 months from the time that we were asking. So we patiently waited for 15 months for the plan to come out. And I feel like now the plan has come out and really we're no closer to having any kind of a resolution. So I was very encouraged with your efforts when you finally got the study that would be very specific to this area and hopefully give us a very specific solution. Pump station or whatever else, but give us a very specific solution in a timely manner for this area. And now what I'm hearing is, well, we have to wait again for something else to be completed. So I think we're all getting a little tired of, and I'm a big supporter of resiliency. I think that's a very important thing for our city. I participated in a lot of those meetings. I think that's great. But I think we are getting a little bit tired, and there's probably other parts of the city that are getting tired of waiting as well.
You're getting flooding fatigue. That's what I think
we hearing. Got flooding fatigue. Yeah. So I am concerned that what I'm now hearing is before we start doing any kind of a study with this $250,000, we have to wait some more. So I guess my question would be, isn't there some way that we can begin? If this is a specific study to look at solutions for this area, isn't there some way that can begin more quickly? Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Do either of you want to kind of speak to that?
Yes, sir. I'll talk to that. And you know, Ann earlier talked about her study preliminary results being available by summertime. And I indicated we're putting our contracts in place so that we're ready to work starting even before that. So we're looking at like the April type of time frame. because we're going to be out doing survey of all the drainage structure, survey elevation surveys, bulkhead elevation surveys, that sort of thing. So we're talking about the April timeframe. So it's not being put off for another year or years. It's, you know, at this point, April is about 4 months away. Well, from tomorrow it'll be 4 months away. So we're there. We've got contractual process to do to get somebody on board, but we're looking at the April timeframe to be starting.
You go ahead.
Oh, I just actually.
Okay.
I apologize that you feel it's been taking a long time. It's important we get it right. I think that's my comment.
Yeah. Thank
and
you.
If you want things to happen faster, I'm one person, and you could totally advocate for more staff for me.
Well, I think Well,
and on that note, I gotta run.
Okay. Thank you so much for being here. I appreciate everything you're doing. Listen, one thing we can do, if Jimmy would agree with this, and this is what I have done over the years with road projects, drainage projects, park projects, is if we can get all, I guess we must have all your names, if you give those to Corey and or Brooks, okay, then we can have another follow-up meeting in June. Or not in June, but maybe in April.
Well, they're going to start in April. That's what I was thinking, like, give it another month.
Yeah, then maybe in June, and see where we're at, and then we could have another follow-up meeting. But when I was a district council member, I'm telling you, Powers Avenue and Toledo Road, that project was going on and on and on and on forever with the previous council member. Those people, I'd never been yelled at so much when I first got in office and held a town meeting. And, I mean, they are yelling. They are mad at me. And other people that were there with the city, God bless them, and everybody was doing the best we could. So I had those follow-up meetings, and it's so funny whenever you go to town meeting as a council member, and they just chew you up and spit you out, and then after the meeting they come up and say, you know, Mr. Peluso, I really didn't mean all those things I was saying about you. Thank you for having this meeting. It's hilarious, I'm telling you. But we could have those What's that?
I appreciate everything.
Oh, I know you do. But so that's when I came up with the idea to have follow-up meetings every 6 months or so, and people felt like, you know, their temperatures went back down closer to normal, and it worked well in keeping everything on track. Go ahead, Mr. Peluso.
Go ahead, please.
And it's real fast.
Please.
Lori Joyce, a resident in Riverside. First, a big thank you, Matt, Jimmy, Bill, Corey, Brooks, and Randy, for just being on this journey with us. You know, when I look at the timeline, it actually dates back to 2017, was the first email that went to Lenny and some of the folks in the city. One last thing, when I think about this area of the city, and flooding fatigue is a great description for it. There's a lot of fatigue, but it impacts a lot of people. It's been brought up about the hospital. There's a rehab center there. It's not a sleepy, you know, suburban street. It is an urban thoroughfare.
Busy.
And, you know, you watch, you've got two senior citizen folk places right up the road. Those folks walk to the hospital. They, you know, it is such a heavy traffic area. And I just, when I think about the greater city, and believe me, I have a heart for all of the city and people who, you know, struggle with this flooding. You know, we could list off, you know, other really horrific things within our city with the flooding that people, it impacts their lives. And at the same time, we have flooding fatigue because we watch it. We deal with it. We watch cars float down the street. We watch cars, you know, go up on people's yards. We watch, you know, wheelchairs slug through it, walkers. So I just figured, you know, to close it out, to have that on record. The personality of the neighborhood is also something that we all, you know, have cared about and worked really hard on. So.
Well, thank you for what you have done, and thank you all for coming and being here. I know Jimmy feels the same way because he's your district council member, but I just have to be the at-large for that geographical area, so you get to vote for me too, except not anymore because I'm done when I'm at the end of this term. But I thank y'all for coming. You always engage in the meetings in such a way that I think it helps move things forward. Complaining and fighting and fussing and all of that, we all get caught up in that. I do. Maybe y'all never do, but I mean, I have before. But the way that y'all engage, I'm telling you, that knocks a lot of time off the problem, because Mr. Long, listen, he's going to address this like he lives in your neighborhood. I know that. And anyway, Jimmy, thank you for handling the meeting. And is there, what else do you have to say?
Thank you, Mr. Carlucci. Okay. And thanks for everyone who spoke up. The first thing I will say is I definitely will immediately start looking into the tidal valves and seeing if that has caused part of the problem for the short term, right? To the point of the pump station, I mean, this is the first time that I've really seen this study. We only just got it a couple days ago, so we've only kind of been diagnosing it the past couple days. It's still, as we've said here today, this still provides us with a lot of information and may end up giving us the solution that we're looking for to begin with. I'll also speak with, now we have State Representative Angie Nixon as our state representative, and then we've got Senator Tracy Davis. I'll speak to them about, you know, what they might be hearing from DOT. We've got the legislative session moving up. At the very least, I can kind of have those early conversations, but, you know, I'm certainly ready to have or put on our calendars, you know, a secondary meeting. To your point, I was going to say, yeah, June might be perfect, because that way we will have a full update of what's already been kind of done starting in April. But there's a couple different moving parts. There's a couple different levers we could pull. And I can assure you, as somebody who lives right down the road from all of you, I certainly experience this flooding all too often, as many of you do. And I know, to the point that you've all made, the character of the neighborhood, how many people live there, the fact that we have the hospital. I mean, it is a state road, right? State roads are going to be fast and going to be highly utilized. So yes, this is a major concern to myself. And I thank you, Councilman Carlucci, for doing some of the hard work that you've done already. And Councilwoman DeFore and Brooks. and thank you, Steve, and to Ann, who just left.
Now, but I'm going to give you one piece of advice, okay? This is a very important piece of advice. And I learned this when I got my first pump station done at Landon Avenue. And I probably told you this story before. I know Steve Long's heard it before. So I get the pump station put in. This is where the park is and the children play, and it's a roundabout there. And it's flooding all the time, and it'll never go away. San Marcos. So we get the pump station put in, and I tell all my constituents that, you know, are there for the you know, for the occasion of, you know, we've got the, and I said, you'll never have to worry unless we have a hurricane that exceeds these walls ever again. You'll never have flooding. And the first daggum frog strangler, it flooded like crazy. And you know what caused the flooding? The daggum magnolia tree has those bloom things like this, and they just crammed into all of the grates, and so the water couldn't get through the grates, and they plugged it all up. So I called the then Public Works Alan Mosley. He drove out there. He had a potato rake with him. He just happened to have a potato rake in the back of his truck, and he raked all those things out, and he saved the day for the neighborhood. So I say that in kidding, but I also say it in the spirit of, keep your eye on those grates and make sure they're clean and people are not blowing, you know, stuff out into the street as much as you can keep that from happening. Okay. Steve, you got anything else you want to say, sir?
I will say, because time is well over, we're gonna shut this down now. We're going to stop the recording. But if you have questions for Mr. Long, just come on up and say hey. Thanks, guys.